following paid program is furnished by Dr. Steve Pettirudi. It's for basic entertainment and informational purposes only and is solely responsible for its content. It does not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, its management, or its staff. News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi. Join Dr. Pettirudi as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudi.
Good morning, everybody. It's Dr. Steve Pettirudi here on the Voice of Southern New England, WPRO. This is Intellectual Medicine, and congratulations on tuning in, and thank you. It's a sign of your own intellect that you're tuning in to such a learned station. Listening to today's topics, we've got news from the world of medicine, and we have insights and the announcement that will continue to extend as we are very excited about introducing the Cancer Fighting Initiative at the Pettirudi Center at Intellectual Medicine. As some of you know, I am back from Kansas, where I attended the National Conference on High-Dose Vitamin C for the Treatment of Cancer. It was at the University of Kansas, where they are amongst the world leaders in researching vitamin C in cancer. It was nice being out in Kansas, but I'm really happy that there are so many people who love living in Kansas. It just means you're not going to come here. I happen to prefer Rhode Island and New England. Beautiful state, a beautiful place. We'll be talking about life extension as usual. Our goal here is to help you live a vital life at your highest and best level for as long as you can. In fact, to even extend that span beyond what is normally considered the boundary of possibility. Now, most of us take our cue from our parents and genetically saying, well, you know, my parents lived to be 82, 79, pick a number. And we dial ourselves in at that level. That can be self-limiting. We know that 80, 90% of lifespan and health has to do with environment and has less to do with genetics. So if we know that, it tells us that we can affect the outcome. So we'll be talking about that today. And morning, Shannon, how are you feeling today? It's a beautiful day out there. I love fog. Something kind of romantic and mystical about it.
No, it's really not.
You don't like fog at all?
Sad and depressing.
Okay, so there are two different perspectives. Now, I will say, though, if you're on the water and you're in a fog, that's a scary place to be. I mean, I've been there. I used to be a quahogger in my youth, and we dreaded fog because when it got that foggy out, you couldn't see anything, not other boats coming at you. You talk about a way to shorten your lifespan, get hit by a big old boat. That'll do it in a heartbeat. But so we got headlines from medical news, or we could dive right into vitamin C, Shan. What do you want to do?
Let's do some headlines.
We'll do some headlines. All right. Well, this is hot off the press. What makes us live longer? Golfers live 5 years longer, according to a study from the British Journal of Sports Medicine. Out of Sweden, they looked at golfers and tried to control other variables and found they lived 5 years longer. Now, I wonder if they controlled it for handicap. I mean, really, some people, the way they play. For instance, I wonder if bad golfers live maybe 10 years longer because they're swinging the club so much.
Did they talk about whether they walked or...
That's a very good point. They did annotate the fact, and I think it correlated with walking, that you're going to burn 500 calories on an 18-hole golf course. So they correlated this to the persistent low level of exercise. And now you know, if you've been listening to me, when it comes to longevity and health, there is something to the fact of having too much exercise. You can literally exercise your way into harm by virtue of too much intensity. And the way it occurs is you create a free radical overload, and it damages your organs. Now, sometimes athletes make that deal with the devil, and they perform at an exceedingly high level. They're well-conditioned. That, folks, does not correlate to health and longevity. Now, the thing about golf, Shannon, is it's that modest tempo. You know who else lives very long? Our orchestra conductors, because they have a similar kind of modest tempo, moving their arms about. Mm-hmm. Now, it's also possible that the social connections here matter. We know that when you have a good social network, you live longer, your brain stays fresh. You know, isolating yourself is a good way to corrode your brain, and we are social pack animals, so being connected matters. You know, you wonder if they looked at things like knitting clubs, if that would extend life. And there's another variable that has to be commented upon, and that's socioeconomic. In general, poor people don't have access to nor play golf, and that may be a marker for other lifestyle variables, but... I thought it was comforting. Now, my father played golf throughout his life. In fact, 1 week before he passed due to a heart attack at age 85, he played a round of golf. A beautiful life, and I think he got a lot of value out of that. Now, kind of connected to that is a study that demonstrated that the brain games, you know, the luminosity that people do, no impact on preserving your brain, none. Now, if you enjoy, shall we call it, I won't call it that, but, you know, mental perseveration, occupying your time with needless tasks, well, then play luminosity. Otherwise, read a book or go play golf. The concept here is mental engagement seems to be the common denominator that helps preserve brain. Another thing out of the news, a drug, rapamycin, has been found to extend the lifespan of dogs 2 to 6 years. Now, if you extrapolate that into humans, that could be, what, 14 to 36 years? And in animal studies, in mice, they have found 60% life extension with the drug rapamycin. Now, this drug is available. It's a prescription drug. It's used in medical conditions, and it's actually being looked at for life extension in humans. The point of this is not so much the drug itself. The drug has side effects, and I do not recommend it. Even though I'm a vigorous advocate of life extension, I don't think it's ready for prime time. The detail is that there are things that can help you extend your life, and many of them are non-pharmacologic. That's what we focus on. What's the right dose and the right amount of your supplements? What role might intravenous support have to play? What role do hormones have to play? So here's evidence that there can be things that can extend lifespan. And I juxtapose that with another story. I like that word, juxtapose. It makes me seem smart. This is, after all, intellectual medicine, so look it up, folks. We juxtapose that with a study out of the aging centers looking at how human beings hit the ceiling of their lifespan. Jan Vijig from Albert Einstein College of Medicine studies molecular genetics and feels that the human lifespan may have capped out at about 115 years. So there are two ways to look at that. One, I wouldn't mind living to be 115. Or two, gosh, if there are drugs that can extend that span, maybe that ceiling is a temporary barrier. And we know that these type of barriers do tend to be, if you will, self-fulfilling prophecies, right? If you think you're going to die at 90, well, you're likely not to exceed it. What we know, to get to 115, you've got to break conventional patterns. There are things that are going to carry you forward. The dynamics of aging include what we call, you know, some of the pillars of aging. One of them, loss of hormonal support. You want to live to be 115 and keep vitality, you better replace your hormones with bioidenticals the right way. Number two, control free radicals. Those are the type of molecules that are produced through metabolism and through stress and through ultraviolet exposure that can damage organs and can accelerate aging. So you have to control your free radicals. Number three, avoid poisoning yourself either with known substances, think excess alcohol and tobacco, or with the immersion into the polluted environment of our world, you must detoxify. And I'm talking specifically about getting the lead out. Nick, maybe that'll be our theme, get the lead out. You know, can we do Led Zeppelin and segueing in and out? Are they too, little Led Zeppelin maybe with Sly? We'll see.
I'll look for it for the next segment.
So get the lead out, folks. Lead is ubiquitous. We test for it at the Intellectual Medicine Center in Warwick. If you've got lead, you got a problem. Heart disease, brain corrosion, it correlates with diminished IQ, increasing dementia risk, increasing cancer risk. We see a lot of cadmium. So those are some of the elements that go into anti-aging. You live conventionally, you die conventionally, you embrace anti-aging, you have an opportunity to live longer than you otherwise would. We are literally pushing for 120. How am I doing on time, Nick? Can I talk a little more?
Yeah, go ahead. We have a couple minutes here.
A good deal. Because another component of this, and this also, Shan, was in the headlines, live at your best body weight. The federal government has been damaging your health for 20 to 30 years with their nonsensical food recommendations. The FDA and their stupid food pyramid has made us all stupid and fat. They went on the low-fat kick in the 1990s, and you know what they replaced it with? Sugar and carb. Brilliant move, right, FDA? Way to go. And they put it all over boxes of cereal that this is good for you. So we all consumed Fruit Loops and Cheerios, and we got rid of whole milk, and we thought we were doing good. And what happened? Obesity exploded. Now we find out, oops, our bad. For the last 30 years, we've been wrong. And we're going to convene a committee in order to try to figure out what healthy eating really means. You think we'll get it right this time, folks? Do you think the FDA has any clue? Do you think for a moment that their recommendations are going to be pure and focused, or possibly, just possibly, influenced by lobbying? I mean, if I'm sitting there at a Procter & Gamble and this thing's coming down the pipe, I'm going to make damn sure that my products are featured. So the FDA needs to get out of the business of telling us what to eat. I mean, redefining healthy is not the business of the government. It's different for different people. Maria Nessel from NYU, who is a leading nutrition expert, cited this as, quote, inherently misleading. And he's right. What's healthy for me, a 210-pound man, is not the same thing that's healthy for my wife, 100-and-not-very-much-pound woman.
Good call.
I'm not going to go there. You know, the same thing that's healthy for a diabetic is not healthy for somebody who's trying to keep their health up. My point is this, folks. You cannot get away from the need to educate yourself. If you rely upon the government for your information, if you rely upon labels on boxes, you're in jeopardy. The information is out there. Intellectual medicine is yours to be embraced. The internet is your freedom, and your brain is your guidepost. And that's what we do on this show every day. We're trying to break down the walls of ignorance. We're trying to extend your knowledge. Come back. We'll be talking about cancer and vitamin C on the other side. I'm Dr. Pederuti. This is Intellectual Medicine. Hi, folks. I am back. It's Dr. Pederuti with Intellectual Medicine here in the booth with Shannon. And Nick being so kind as to humor me by playing Sly and the Family Stone. Thank you, Nick. First rock concert I ever went to in my life, so it will always have a warm place in my heart. Well, now, folks, I'd like to pivot the conversation. Now, today, we do have open lines, and we do not have any studio guests. So we've made space for you if you want to call in, especially talking about cancer and talking about modalities to help fight cancer, make it less likely to come back, or prevent it from occurring in the first place. Now, vitamin C is one of the primary modalities that we use at Intellectual Medicine to help fight cancer and to help prevent its recurrence. As I mentioned, I've been studying this for many years. We've been delivering for over 3 years at the Pederuti Center, Intellectual Medicine in Warwick. And we're pleased with the work we've been able to do for people. You'll be hearing some of their stories and meeting some of them over our months and years together on this station. But today I'd like to start laying down some of the foundation work. Now, vitamin C has been around for many, many years. Linus Pauling famously postulated that it could have powerful health-benefiting effects. Two-time Nobel laureate, was widely criticized in conventional medical and scientific circles. However, in 1974, Cameron and Campbell in the United Kingdom published a paper called The Orthomolecular Treatment of Cancer, a clinical trial of high-dose vitamin C in advanced human cancer. What they found is that people given high-dose intravenous, note the route, intravenous, not oral, vitamin C, had significantly extended lifespan in the face of terminal cancer with an improved quality of life, more energy, less pain, and less discomfort. That study did not ignite a revolution in medicine the way you might have hoped, but rather created cynicism. In 1984-85, the Mayo Clinic in the U.S. tried to reproduce that study, and they took the dose used in Cameron and Campbell, 10,000 milligrams. Now, they gave it to patients, and they concluded that there was no benefit to vitamin C. And that study made the headlines, and that study gained penetration within conventional medicine. And to this day, there are people who believe that vitamin C has no value, most prominently conventional oncologists. Now, let me just say this. My colleagues in conventional oncology are some of the finest, most empathic human beings you will ever meet. Every day they go into the belly of the beast and they sweat and they try to help. But they're limited in their knowledge and in the scope of their ability, just like I am. I'm not knowledgeable about chemotherapy, but I am knowledgeable about complementary ways to fight your cancer. And when we work together, the outcomes are amazing. When intellectual medicine is rejected out of hand, out of fear and ignorance, patients suffer. So let's swing back to Cameron and back to the state of vitamin C. The problem, folks, at Mayo is they did the study with oral vitamin C. And it was Dr. Levine. He's now at the National Institute of Health. And he was at this conference. I had the opportunity to speak with him, who first recognized the difference. And he's an expert in the bioavailability of vitamin C, that is, how much of that C actually gets in your bloodstream. And he said, wait a minute, the Mayo study is flawed. They did the same dose, but they used the wrong route. And by giving it orally, we know the body limits the amount of vitamin C that can get in the blood. And when it gets capped out, you can only, it caps out somewhere around 2,000 to 5,000 milligrams of oral vitamin C. Beyond that, you can't get a blood level that's any higher. When we do it intravenously, we now go beyond what Cameron did in his study. Instead of 10,000 milligrams, we're going as high as 50,000 milligrams. And something happens when you do that. Vitamin C, which is widely known as an antioxidant, becomes pro-oxidative. What does that mean? It means instead of neutralizing free radicals, it creates a temporary toxic free radical storm that is uniquely capable of attacking cancer cells. It can do that and not harm your cells. It turns out that cancer loves sugar. In fact, cancer cells absorb sugar 50 to 100 times faster and greater than your native cells. It also turns out that vitamin C has a molecular structure that looks very much like sugar. So guess what, folks? The cancer cells are sucking up that vitamin C. And when it does that, it's like a Trojan horse. It gets inside the cell. It converts into hydrogen peroxide, destroying the cancer cells. Fortunately, our cells are equipped with an enzyme called catalase that can neutralize that effect. So we believe this is the primary mechanism of action at play, and it's why we can give these high doses and have it utterly safe for humans and enormously toxic to cancer. So we're going to continue this conversation. I do need to take a break at this moment. Up next from the Seascape News Center, Doug Lazette. Take it away, Doug.
News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi. Join Dr. Pettirudi as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudi.
Good morning, folks, and I am back. It's Dr. Pettirudi with Shannon and Nick behind the glass. We're talking intellectual medicine this morning, and today's focus has been on cancer, specifically non-chemotherapeutic means of helping to fight, control, and limit it. We're specifically talking about IV vitamin C, trying to educate folks about its potential use so you can reflect upon this and decide how it may fit into your treatment or your prevention. We'll talk about secondary prevention. What do you do after the cancer is gone to prevent it from coming back? So we'll be talking about that. But in the meantime, we're talking about a lot of the misinformation about vitamin C. Conventional oncologists will say sometimes, well, you can't do vitamin C when you're getting your chemotherapy because chemotherapy is pro-oxidative in its effect and vitamin C is an antioxidant. As I explained in the last segment, that's true if the vitamin C is given orally. If it's given intravenously, it becomes pro-oxidative. It gets in the cell, destroying cancer cells, and is safe for your cells. So now we know some of the mechanism of action of how vitamin C works. There's another mechanism at play that may be a factor. Vitamin C is critical for collagen formation. Now, we use it at Intellectual Medicine Center for people that have had operative procedures because it enhances collagen and recovery. Now, we use it aesthetically as well to keep faces looking young when we do aesthetic treatments because it restores collagen. It gives a luster and a glow to the skin. Now, what it does inside your body and what it may be doing in the cancer is creating more of a fibrous collagenous barrier, if you will, turning fiber into the cancer itself, turning the cancer into a fibrous nodule that makes it less likely to metastasize, less likely to get out into the system. So we've got a direct killing effect on cancer. We've got the fiber forming benefit. And finally, we've got the immune boosting aspect, because vitamin C is a critical element of your own immune system. So we're targeting cancer not only by trying to burn it up, but making your body stronger to fight it. So the IV vitamin C is out there. It's being used in many centers. And what inspired us really is just the call from our patients. Now, we had a patient who came to us 3 years ago seeking IV vitamin C. Our center was up and running and was the first patient we ever accepted for treatment. And we spared her the need to travel to distant parts of the country in order to gain this treatment. That was 3 years ago, and she continues to thrive. In fact, at one point, she's battling a certain type of lymphoma. Her white blood cell count was 90,000. It's now normal, and she has not had any conventional treatments by her choice, certainly not a requirement. We were very pleased to be able to help out some local children. They're fighting certain kinds of cancer, and we are capable, because of what we do locally, of sparing people the need to go to Kansas, which for a long time was the only outlet for this form of therapy. People would fly out to the Reardon Center or to the University of Kansas attempting to get treatment. The problem with that, of course, is this type of therapy needs to be extended. So there's a cycle of intravenous treatment that can be effective and helpful to support your health, but then there's that ongoing aspect of it. So let's talk about safety. Whenever you're doing anything in medicine, that's the number one concern, especially when you're doing something as advanced as what we're doing. Multiple step one studies and a level one study is one designed to determine safety of a new product have been performed. They have all shown no harm, none. In our 3 years experience doing thousands of IVs at our center at Intellectual Medicine, we have had zero complications, not one infectious complication. Now, despite the fact we have had zero complications, we recently went through a major upgrade, didn't we, Shannon?
Oh, we sure did.
Yeah, how's it looking over there?
It's gorgeous.
Well, not only does it look good, but we added something else, didn't we?
We did. A very large hood.
I love that
very
hood.
Very large hood. I know you do. Well, I know.
The hood is a sterile mixing hood that takes our IVs to another level, equivalent to the most advanced in the nation, in the world. We, despite having zero infectious complications, we've enhanced our safety threshold. How about the vitamin C itself? As we mentioned, extraordinarily safe. It does not harm your native cells. It is requires some lab screening to ensure its safety, but that's critical. So we know that this agent is safe. We know it has a plausible, rational mechanism of action. Well, does it work? Well, in one phase one study, they did this at the University of Iowa, and they were giving high-dose vitamin C to patients with pancreatic cancer. They found that not only was it safe, but the patients were living longer. They were so excited by the finding, they went to the government and said, we need money to do a phase two study to prove efficacy. And you know what the government said? Yes, we're going to fund you. Pancreatic cancer is horrible, and you have something that can work. And at the last minute, they pulled their funding away. Do you know why? Because a conventional pharmaceutical drug came to market that was proven to be clinically relevant in its efficacy, not clinically, but statistically relevant, in extending the lifespan of people with pancreatic cancer. And the government said, well, we have a new drug. We don't want to study vitamin C. Shannon, do you have any idea how much longer they extended the lifespan?
Oh, it's got to be like 3 months.
Yeah, it was 2 weeks.
Oh, 2 weeks.
Yeah, the new drug gave you 2 whole weeks. At what price of misery? So they pulled the funding for vitamin C. And I'll tell you what one of the researchers said to me at the conference. It was very compelling and very enlightening to me. Nick, do I have time to do this part now, or do you want me? Okay, so he said, we can't do the research. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, we're university-centered. They're not going to let us get this type of study done that we really need to have done. The government's not funding it. The universities are reluctant because they're dominated by conventional oncologists, many of whom think that this has no merit at all. He said, you've got to do it. You and doctors like you, the ones that are out there treating patients, you need to gather this data a case at a time. He said, one case, a case study is evidence. A case study is science. So at our center at Intellectual Medicine, we recently hired a new nurse, and we're going to be generating a cancer registry for everybody that enrolls in this form of treatment so we can track quality of life, longevity, individual, and ultimately cumulative outcomes. We have seen remarkable things happening on an individual basis. This science, this treatment has been kept alive in the face of skeptics by people that are following in the tradition and the pattern of intellectual medicine. They have kept it alive because of case studies and individual reports of remarkable outcomes and by patient demand. And we are going to continue that tradition. We're going to build on it, intellectual medicine. It's available now and local. And when we come back after this break, we're going to talk a little bit more about what this entails. And we're going to talk about something very important, which is secondary prevention, what to do after the fire. So stay tuned, folks. We're talking a very critical topic today, what you can do to help keep your health, fight cancer, and live 120 beautiful years. I'm Dr. Pedderity with Shannon. This is Intellectual Medicine on WPRO. Love it. I love it. Nick, you're just great. Okay, I'm Dr. Pedderity. This is Intellectual Medicine. I am 120. We call it I am 120 because we're aspiring for the 120-year lifespan. To get there, you've got to not catch cancer or beat it if you get it. You've got to protect your brain, your heart, your hormones. We're talking about vitamin C and cancer treatment. Our typical protocol is a 3-month cycle of twice weekly IV infusions of vitamin C. We sometimes will add alpha lipoic acid to that. We will be talking about alpha lipoic acid. In fact, we'll be discussing it with the pioneer, Dr. Bert Berkson out of New Mexico. He will be with us. We'll have to get a tape show since he doesn't want to wake up at 5 a.m. to do it. Great guy, brilliant thinker. But this approach that we use is something that is shown efficacy on individual cases. The evidence is building. Now, the criticism is, well, there's not a big double-blind placebo-controlled study proving it works. Well, that's a true statement. The problem is this. Those studies aren't getting funded. They're slow, and they have to be done for each individual type of cancer. Now, we know that the vitamin C works for nearly all different cancer types. It's been studied in vitro, which is, if you will, in the test tube, and it's been shown to be directly toxic to cancer. So this affordable treatment is available now and can be added to or used sometimes when chemotherapeutic agents don't have a great remedy. Listen, if there's a drug out there that's going to cure your problem, is cheap and available, you'd be a fool not to partake of it. On the other hand, if the avenue of treatment involves misery and expense and doesn't lead to a cure, then it's incumbent upon us to go beyond convention. Now, many of my patients do this, Shannon, and you know they go to the research, they get diagnosed with cancer, and they dive into the research. And they'll go to their oncologist and say, gee, tell me what you think about mushroom therapy, or tell me what you think about low-dose naltrexone. And the docs will look at them and say, oh, that's nonsense. And it's not because the doctors don't care, folks. It's they don't have the time to research this stuff. They're not knowledgeable about it, and they have a presumption that it's not effective. At our center, one of the first things we do is integrate all these different elements. Intellectual medicine means taking science, studying its possibilities, and applying it right now. It does not mean waiting for absolute proof. That's not intellectual medicine. That's common sense. Intellectual medicine requires application of your reason. So we can look at those supplements, we can decide which ones make sense, and we can weave them in a complementary fashion. So there's an active element to cancer. You've got to hit it when it's present. But what about after the storm? Now here you are, you've had your mastectomy, you've had your prostate removed, you've had your lung cancer treated, and you're declared free of the disease. What does that really mean? Well, they can't see cells, folks. They're too damn small. You could be harboring a small colony of cancer cells. the doubling time of that cancer could be, oh, let's say it's every 4 months, which is not uncommon for cancer. And let's say you've got 10,000 cancer cells roaming around your body. It could be years before they ever manifest into a visible nodule. Conventional medicine will do nothing but sit and watch. Come back in 3 months. Come back in 3 months. Come back in 3 months. We'll see if the cancer pops up again. Go after it now. So our theory, the one that we're implementing, secondary prevention for fighting cancer, means if you've ever had cancer, you're at risk. Why? Your body made it in the first place. There's something about your toxic exposure, your immune health, and or your genetic endowment that makes you susceptible, not only to the cancer you had, unfortunately, to other types as well. So we advocate for monthly high-dose IV vitamin C infusions. Why? Well, the mechanism of action is cellular, individual cells. It floats throughout your entire body, carpet bombing it completely. So imagine a little colony of cells are sitting there harboring in a nook or corner of your body, trying to divide, and uh-oh, here comes a tidal wave of vitamin C, obliterating them, or at least suppressing them. And 10,000 cells becomes 20, becomes 40, becomes 80. Oops, here's the vitamin C. It's back down to 10,000. You could do that indefinitely. And our goal is to build an anti-cancer lifestyle that's affordable, that's intellectual, that's rational, and ultimately not fully proven, because that research can't be done. It doesn't mean that we can't fight this and that you can't fight it better than you are. We're going to talk a little bit about the nutritional elements of this when we come back. I'm Dr. Pedrutti. This is Intellectual Medicine, fighting for you to live our longest and best life. Stay with us, folks. Hey, everybody. It's Dr. Pedrutti, Intellectual Medicine 120. I'm back. We're having a detailed and in-depth discussion, conversation about the role of IV vitamin C in cancer and cancer fighting and secondary prevention, that which you can do to make cancer less likely to come back. There are there is the option of the high-dose IV vitamin C, the monthly infusion to kill little baby cancer cells is what I'm advocating. There are many supplements that have been shown to have merit, and we don't have time this morning to get into all of them, but we will over time together. So we'd like you to come back to us each week here at WPRO, 8 to 9 o'clock. I'm Dr. Steve Pedrutti. We're the founder of Intellectual Medicine 120, along with Shannon, who will be joining me there when she becomes a nurse practitioner.
That's right.
When's that going to happen, Shan?
February.
In February, she'll have completed her studies. And we are looking for like-minded physicians and nurse practitioners to join our movement. We have recently established the capability of helping doctors open up intellectual medicine centers anywhere in the country. So if you or someone you know is interested in this type of medicine, reach out to me. We're interested in making what we do a movement. Shannon, we've just seen too many good things happen.
We have.
I mean, our patients just live differently. Their lives turn around. They have these miraculous recoveries, these remarkable changes in energy, vitality. They become more youthful and dynamic. This is not a theory. This is a proven outcomes. Now, you've heard from some of those folks, and you'll hear from more, and we'll be bringing them to you week to week. Now, we don't have a ton of time to get into the nutritional aspects of cancer fighting, but we will. There's a lot of discussion about what type of diet one should go on, and there's a perception on the part of some that diet is irrelevant. So we take exception to that belief. Diet is critically relevant in fighting and preventing cancer. And it all starts with using what we have effectively invented at Intellectual Medicine, which is the cure for obesity. I think that we have enough evidence where we can affirmatively say that, Shannon. I mean, it's been thousands of people now.
It has. Years.
Yeah, 90% than 90% success rate of permanent weight loss through intellectual medicine. And so I think all of these threads tie together, folks. You fight cancer, you live your longest life, you maintain sexual vitality, you maintain your brain, your bones, your muscles. Everything connects. One of the flaws of modern medicine is to try to break us down into little chunks, little pieces. It's not how human beings work. We work by weaving it all together. So go out there. It's Saturday, right? It is Saturday.
It is.
The weather is going to be fantastic. We are going to have a beautiful weekend living your intellectual medicine. 120-year lifespan. Thanks to Nick. Thanks to Shannon. Stay tuned for Big Blue Bug Solutions with Tony DeJesus. I'm Dr. Pedderudi. This is Intellectual Medicine. We are WPRO.
News, traffic, and weather from the Seascape News Center begins now.